WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And I believe the first recording we're going to hear is one of the first recordings that he became well known for.
Yeah, it's from 1957, and it's composed by George Russell, who himself became a very fine pianist, but chose to have Bill Evans play piano on this track, which is pretty revealing right there. I think it was written specifically for Bill Evans. It's called Concerto for Billy the Kid and has very little to do with Aaron Copland. And Russell later expanded this into a longer piece called All About Rosie, which was based on the children's game Ring Around the Rosie. And it again featured Bill Evans. This is the shorter version. And I don't think we're losing very much by hearing only the shorter version, because I think this is actually the better work. And you can hear things in Evans' style that some people think disappeared later on. This is very muscular playing, and he uses his left hand very, very convincingly. So should we hear that now?
Okay, and this is Concerto for Billy the Kid, featuring the playing of pianist Bill Evans. Thank you. was Concerto for Billy the Kid, written by George Russell, recorded in 1957, spotlighting the piano playing of Bill Evans, who died yesterday at the age of 51. If you're just joining us, Francis Davis, the host of Interval, our out-of-print jazz feature, is with me this afternoon to play some of the recordings that Bill Evans has made through his career and to talk with us about his music and about his life. Francis, what do you think are some of the influences that Bill Evans and his music have had on other pianists of his time?
Well, I think his influence was specifically on pianists, as opposed to somebody say like McCoy Tyner or Cecil Taylor, who seems to influence not only other pianists but other instrumentalists. But that influence, that Evans influence, is all pervasive. It's really impossible to go into a restaurant where there's a piano player playing for diners without hearing some Bill Evans, either in that the performer is playing a piece that Evans recorded, a standard, say, that Evans recorded, and probably knows it from either the record or a Bill Evans songbook, or just in the style. There's a certain Bill Evans style that you can hear in really odd places. There was a TV commercial several years ago for a brand of tuna. Can I say the brand?
Sure, yeah.
Three Diamonds, which was probably played by some West Coast pianist, but it really sounded like Bill Evans and the sound of the Bill Evans Trio. I think Evans had a really profound effect on the players who comprise the ECM stable of artists, along with Miles Davis and John Coltrane, who I think also influenced that music. But that certain tranquil sense, almost a sense of quietude, it's really maybe a miscomprehension of what Evans's music meant, but in the music of people like Chick Corea, Keith Jarrett, the group Aragon, you can hear a lot of Bill Evans. And they perform Evans tunes, by the way.
I remember one day in the Fresh Air office, we had about five of Bill Evans' records sitting on one of the desks, and there were photographs of him on each one, and he looked very different in each of them. And Danny Miller said that if you look at Evans' albums, he looks almost like a quick change artist, since he's dressed differently, has different length hair, some he has a beard, some he doesn't have a beard, and it somehow changes the whole shape of his face and his appearance. You've seen him in concert recently. What was he like to watch in concert?
Almost very painful because of his posture on the bench. I should add that anybody wanting to see Bill Evans in concert, I don't know if this will ever be rerun, but recently on Channel 12 in the series Jazz at the Maintenance Shop, there were two Bill Evans programs, of which I saw the first. And it was a pretty interesting program in the sense of giving a sense of what Evans was like in concert. But Evans sits on the piano bench, or sat on the piano bench, with his shoulders hunched roundly forward and his neck bent almost parallel to the keyboard, so that often no head appeared above his collar. And it's a pretty painful posture if you're the kind of person that sits behind a pianist and really so engrossed in what somebody like Bill Evans is playing that you tend to assume the posture, especially if you're the sort of person whose hands tap out. Well, we won't even talk about that. But anyway, I found myself in real pain watching Evans, but it was really delighted pain. And other than that, he was almost immobile on the bench. Nothing moved except for his limbs. You could see his foot applying discrete pressure to the pedals now and then. And, of course, his hands. And his arms and his hands spreading very, very far to realize his voicings. So he was really fascinating to watch. And even though his appearance changed, I guess he was a very average-looking person and certainly usually performed wearing a suit. And it's really interesting to me that there should be such a good Evans TV program as the one I just mentioned, because the rap against jazz on television is that it's not supposed to be a visual music, I guess because the people aren't wearing loud ties and shirts or something. But Evans was certainly fascinating to watch and really gives the lie to that. If somebody's really sympathetic to what's going on, there's no end of things to look at. I think right now we should hear Bill Evans play with Miles Davis for two reasons. The Miles Davis stint is very important. First of all, it brought Evans to the attention of a larger public, and after leaving Miles Davis, he formed his own trio, and we'll hear the work of that trio later in the program. But also because Bill Evans seems really important to Miles Davis at that time. Miles had become enamored of scales and very spacious playing. And I think you can hear from the way Bill Evans plays behind Miles how important Evans was in the realization of that concept. So this is a track composed by, well, composed by Miles Davis, if you look at the Columbia record that it's on, that we're playing it from, which is kind of blue. Composed by Bill Evans, if you look at Bill Evans's records, probably a collaboration. But this is called Blue and Green. Thank you. Blue and Green, a piece composed by Miles Davis and Bill Evans, also featuring John Coltrane. Bill Evans died yesterday of a bleeding ulcer at age 51. Bill Evans and Miles Davis seemed to have a reciprocal influence upon each other, and I think you can hear the way that Miles is playing really gathered direction at that point in his career, 1959, from the way Bill Evans countered Miles' solos with his own, and also from the way that Bill Evans played below Miles Davis. That piece, Blue and Green, seems to be based on a song called Some Other Time, a show tune written by Leonard Bernstein along with Condon and Green. And that same piece, Some Other Time, is also the source of another very famous Bill Evans performance, a solo piano performance called Peace Piece, which we'll hear in just a second. But I think what this illustrates is how little material Bill Evans used and what he did with the little material that he did use. Lee Konitz one time, a very fine alto saxophonist, Lee Konitz, one time said that a player had really to learn very, very few songs, that he had never exhausted the possibilities harmonically and melodically and rhythmically in all the songs. And that goes counter to what every musician learns, that you have to know a lot of pieces in order to get jobs, and also that you have to keep constantly changing your style to stay in fashion, and both for commercial pressures and also the pressure of your peers. They're always younger players snapping at the heels of established musicians. But Evans used very, very little material, but I think you'll sense what wonderful use he made of it, comparing this piece that we'll hear now to the piece that we heard last. This is called Peace, Peace. Thank you.
Bill Evans has recorded in about 1959 a piece called Peace, Peace. And if you're just joining us, Bill Evans died yesterday at the age of 51 by what was expected, what is thought to have been a bleeding ulcer. I believe the autopsy still hasn't been done. So Francis Davis is with us today. Francis is the host of Interval, our out-of-print jazz feature, Thursdays at 3:30. And Francis has brought with him some recorded highlights from Bill Evans' career and is talking with us about Evans' life and music. Francis, before we heard that recording, you had mentioned that Evans seemed to use a very small amount of material but made a lot of that material in his playing. You've seen him a few times in concert. What kind of material was he playing in his recent concerts?
Well, I'd seen him twice, twice within about 6 months, and I think the concerts varied not at all, really. He played a Joe Zawinul piece called Midnight Mood, the theme from MASH, Jimmy Rolls's The Peacocks, some of his own compositions, Turn Out the Stars. He may have played Waltz for Debbie in both performances. He kept reinvestigating the same material over and over again. And a lot of that had to do with changes in his group. Such was the interaction between Evans and whichever bass player he had in the band at the time, that playing Waltz for Debbie with Scott LaFaro was not like playing it with Eddie Gomez, and was not like playing it with his latest bassist, Mark Johnson. I think now I'd like to play two things by Bill Evans, both featuring trios, very famous Bill Evans trios. The first is from a Bill Evans trio formed in 1960, although this was recorded in 1961 after the group had been together for a year. And as it turns out, this live recording was the last, not only the last recording the group ever made, but the last performance, because a week after this was recorded in 1961 at the Village Vanguard, the bassist Scott LaFaro, who seemed a very liberating influence on Bill Evans, was killed in a car crash. I think exactly 7 or 8 days after this performance in June of 1961. The drummer was Paul Modian, or Paul Motion, as some people say. I think it is Motion. A drummer praised at the time in Bill Evans's bands for being unobtrusive, which I don't know if a drummer can ever be praised for being unobtrusive. I like drummers to obtrude. The track we'll hear after that is from the Montreux Jazz Festival in 1968, which is another Evans trio with another very interesting bassist, Eddie Gomez, whose style really seems influenced by Scott LaFaro's, and I guess influenced by Bill Evans too, since it's impossible probably, even though you're a bassist, to listen to Scott LaFaro without hearing Bill Evans. And the drummer on that is Jack DeJohnette, who was with Evans very, very briefly, but really seemed to drive him and really seemed to give him the kind of propulsion and the kind of direction that he needed. So we'll hear two Bill Evans trios, Waltz for Debbie with Scott LaFaro, probably Evans's most famous composition, and then One for Helen, written for his longtime manager, Helen Keane, one of the best managers I think any musician ever had. So let's hear those now. Thank you. Two by Bill Evans. That was One for Helen, recorded in 1968 at the Montreux Jazz Festival. Bill Evans on piano with Eddie Gomez on bass and Jack DeJohnette on drums. And before that, from 1961, Waltz for Debbie, Evans's best-known composition with Scott LaFaro on bass and Paul Motion on drums. Bill Evans, the late Bill Evans, we have to say now, working with two very gifted bass players.
Actually, the occasion for Francis's visit to Fresh Air today is it's an unfortunate occasion. Bill Evans died yesterday at the age of 51. He died from what we think was bleeding ulcers. That's the cause of death that was given before the autopsy was performed. So Francis has been with us this afternoon playing some of Bill Evans' work and talking about his career and his music. And we'll be hearing another one of Bill Evans' recent recordings, this time in just a couple of minutes. But, Francis, is there any final things you'd like to say about Bill Evans today?
Yeah, I've been thinking about the two times that I saw Bill Evans within the same year. That was in 1979. I saw him twice in 79 and enjoyed him both times, though I thought the second time was a much superior performance, much livelier Bill Evans. But I don't know if the difference in performance would have been all that discernible to the uninterested ear. Such was Evans' evenness. Evans's singing tone was so even, and he handled all tempos with such equanimity that his performances could suffer a sameness, although to hear him at any time was supposed to be in the sway of a really superior sense of order and logic. But he was a very, even though he was one of the first musicians I admired, often I took him for granted. And when I did an interval on Bill Evans back in August of 1979, I ended by saying that and concluded that perhaps the reason I took him for granted was that I'd be able to rediscover him again from time to time. You know, after taking him for granted, there were periods, especially right before doing the show, where I wanted to listen to nothing but Bill Evans. And it occurs to me now that doesn't stop now that Evans's life has ended, that as long as there are phonograph records, people will perhaps be taking Bill Evans for granted from time to time, but he'll also be rediscovered periodically, and not just on a mass level as an influence or a great jazzman of the 50s, 60s, 70s, but for every listener personally. I think to listen to jazz piano and to hear what happened to it after Bud Powell, you have to listen to Bill Evans. There's no getting around it. He was a very great musician. The last record that he made, which came out earlier this year, is, I think, a really important one in Evans's career. He had been recording usually with trios, himself, bass and drums. This adds a trumpeter and a tenor saxophonist. It seems in one way an effort to recapture the spirit of the kind of blues session, and it certainly brought out brought out the muscularity in Evans's style that some people had thought had gone out of it. We won't hear, unfortunately, the tracks with the trumpeter and the tenor saxophonist because we don't have time, but I'd like to recommend the record. It's called We Will Meet Again. And what we will hear from it is the solo piano piece that closes the first side. And it's a Bill Evans composition. It's the title track of the album, and it's called We Will Meet Again.
Bill Evans playing the title recording from his last album, which was ironically titled We Will Meet Again. Francis, for someone who's just getting acquainted with Bill Evans playing, what would you recommend as a good place to start?
Well, there's a double reissue on Milestone called the Vanguard Sessions, I believe, which is the trio with Bill Evans, Scott LaFaro, and Paul Motion. And that would seem the essential Bill Evans record. And Kind of Blue, under Miles Davis's name, I think really kind of defines not only Miles' sensibility at the time, but also Bill Evans's.
Well, Francis, I want to thank you for putting together this remembrance of Bill Evans for us. Bill Evans very sadly died yesterday at the age of 51. Once again, the cause of death, probable cause of death, was given as being bleeding ulcers, but I don't believe the official autopsy has been done yet. Francis is also the host of Interval, our Thursday 3:30 feature, which is profiles of jazz musicians focusing on their out-of-print jazz recordings. Francis, thanks again for preparing this feature for us this afternoon on Fresh Air.